Light and hear me. Do a little check.
Yeah,
oh, even the fancy tool I can use. Yes, welcome to the talk on metadata. Metadata is a buzzword on par with cloud and blockchain and other nebulous terms of fashion, and we haven't defined it yet, or I haven't defined it yet, but I will talk on metadata as it is used in libraries. And in libraries it is it's a simple and yeah, it's simply the description of a book. That is metadata, nothing else. If you have seen in the in the back of books, usually you have lists of literature, and this is metadata. And actually what a library is all about, it is a comprehensive list of this books a library has to offer, and it's all about metadata, one can say, if one wants to use this term. And yeah, so it's the heart and core of library software. Library software usually is proprietary, and yeah, very it's no one it's not Unix friendly, so to say, so nothing one wants to deal with in his spare time. And I've thought on and off and how to deal with metadata properly without all these databases and HTML views on metadata, and involving all these needless abstraction layers on top of it. And one simple and direct way would be a text file. This is really the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, because it is nothing else, just sticks to a discipline, it's one line of text, and one line of text is always gives us access to all the Unix text tools. They implicitly work on the line delimiter, and then we can parse it and reorder it and reformat it and all that. And Gopher is also a hot candidate for a saner tool or format or protocol dealing with these things libraries do. And in fact it was used, and somehow got replaced by over time by the complex systems we now have, and maybe it's time to reintroduce them. I invented a library called Library of Schilder. That's the maybe an example for a stupid librarians that always try to deal with the latest the latest complex systems without really having control of the data. And many do resemble some libraries that exist, this library of Schilder. So let's see. Essential tools are file system and grep. Grep was the tool before Google was invented in 1997, if I remember correctly. It was the most applied and used information retrieval tool, and it's still very good. And then there's a GRES tool, which has never been programmed, but it is mentioned by Kernighan in his book as an exercise for the student. It's not so difficult. It just means not P as print, but S as substitute, some sort of simple set, or not to print the found regex pattern, but to substitute with another string. And that is not needed on the user level, but on the librarian level, when the librarian wants to add something in a found book entry, maybe some classification, or for correcting purposes. GRES, it's mentioned in the UPE in a book, Unix Programming Environment. And one thing I would be interested is to see what's more efficient, find to use the find tool when going through a library catalog, or to use the grab tool, which also but it's maybe just an late or a feature on of grab to also specify these file blobs. I don't know if it's important. It could be, could make a little difference. Just this came out of practical, or from my practical work, this idea. And that's a classic table. I did it. Usually one name drops all the things one is annoyed of, and then presents some other tools which are not perfect but less harmful. Yeah, that's what we have today. Is usually when you query a library, you get a web interface, and that's suited very well with high efforts. It is designed for the beginner. It's very beginner friendly, and a huge amount of work and effort and programmer hours is spent on absolute beginners, and this is good. But it frustrates the more advanced user. And if the background text for this line is the text you probably all know, Anselm has written it some years ago, the philosophy text of Sackless, 6 or 8 paragraphs, not too long, and that's all about how huge efforts in an industry goes towards making it easy for beginners and computer illiterates even, and the more advanced user is left out, and in many cases it's even frustrating how difficult it is made to get access to very simple and data. So that's needed. Text clients, it would the best and most radical solution would be to, for a library to make their catalog available as a direct link in text format. It's not that huge as it seems to be, maybe some 100 megabytes, but not more. And back in the days in the 90s and 80s, that was a huge amount of megabytes, so one can imagine that they came up with the idea, let's do some databases around it. But nowadays it would be more feasible to just deal with 100 megabytes of text file. Then we have all the Unix text tool chain at hand and can do whatever we want without reinventing it by programmers who maybe don't even are very familiar with Linux, and reinventing these query tools on top of their databases. And it's always very clumsy and not so good as what we already have. HTML views are of no use for advanced users, library users, and databases Neither, I've mentioned that already. The logical way to store it would be file system, and that also maps, I think, good to the Gopher menu system if one wants to present it in that way. Let's see, what did I present there? An overview on the actual size of the catalogs. Think of lines when there are 5 million books in a library, in a larger library, then we get a file, text file with 5 million lines. That's quite large, but not so large that we would need a special database. Not anymore. May mention this, but that's there might be an application for text compression also in these catalogs. I've made a test on word lists. There, somewhere in the Unix file system, there's a place for word lists. English, mostly dictionary style word list, and they are usually single words on each line. So very long line. The file has many lines and very short lines because it's only one word. And this is extremely good for compression, finite state compression. If one saves this text file as a finite state network, you get a much better compression than, for example, with all the popular zip or gzip or bzip methods. And that would mean to write a grammar in quotation marks, a formal description of this metadata entries, and to also achieve this compression in longer lines. In longer lines, it's not so. Zip would be better, but if one has a description of this format, that could be used also for higher gains with longer lines. That's something for the linguist to play with. And then I found a philosopher which I would like to mention a bit. I would like to name drop him. He is a philosopher from Colombia. Davila is his name. And he has some very nice thinking about society, but also on how stupidity evolves, because these complex systems are a case of non-disciplined thinking, stupidity, so to say. And there are lots of nice quotations, and he has written in Spanish. He's quite popular in his German translations, and maybe the French are supposed to read it in Spanish, and yeah, I don't know. I'm currently in the process of collecting his writings, and that's a long list, but it fits the screen. That's probably the most interesting notes I have. OPAC, that's the acronym for Online Public Access Catalog, which is often preferable over the Web 2.0 library interfaces. It's much more responsive, even though it's not really what we want. We want the data in a file accessible for our own local tools, but still better than what we have. And there was this the meaning of online in OPAC is a bit different from what we use online nowadays when we think of web and Web 2.0 or things like that. And back in the days, 80s or 70s even, it was more, I think, I haven't found a definition of it in this sense, but it's, I think of D-menu. I would call D-menu an online lookup tool or so, and that's also what they thought of. They had maybe direct access or to the text files or immediate access to it. Yeah, that's an interesting usage of this online world. We hear it everywhere nowadays, and that's a bit sarcastic note what a library is. If it's not working in the way I and every non-beginning user would like, it's a bit like pimping out information. It's they only do give us small amounts of it. It's they never give us access to the whole catalog, and that's yeah. There's no clear reason for it. Maybe the obvious reason is that the database would be too slow generating 5 million records HTML page. That would be too slow for the database, and it's usually restricted to 10 or most maximum 100 pieces of media. That means books. So that's not very much if one wants to do a thorough research on a specific, say, on the topic of Unix. If I want to see what has been written on Unix, then 100 books is not very much. And one can even, in my impression, it was even, I felt a bit offended because there are so many points that had been implemented in the recent years and decades that makes it hard for us to get access to the simple text catalog. There are a myriad of standards, and they are not really compatible. You cannot easily convert between them. You sometimes lose information on the way because it's they are not bijective mappings in between them, and yeah, it's maybe interesting for historians of computer science, but it's presents a hurdle for work often. And then we have when we think of HTML representations of text documents, usually we are only interested in the information is transported on strings that make up only 1/10 or less of the document size. So there's a lot of some layout related tags, or even worse, some what JavaScript or anything else which is not the strings that is that are supposed to be read by the reader is noise in an information retrieval view. So there has been put large amounts of noise by the factor of 10 or even more. We mentioned today how the memory consumption of a browser that kind of relates to this noise ratio. It easily gets into hundreds of megabytes to display one page of newspaper, and there's a lot of noise going on in the background. Then XML versions. XML is a well-known pest from the it became epidemic maybe in the zero years, but it's there, and some usually one has to deal a lot with the question, how do I get my strings out of the XML? One never needs the XML, just it's always the question how to get rid of it. And then sometimes we have to deal with Java, and JSON is also nasty. It's even less readable than XML in these text contexts. Yes, all that has been introduced, and just to make things hard, to make things easy for the beginner and very hard for us. Let's see. what else is important to notice? Databases and user interfaces, web-based only nowadays. The whole, yeah, it's pretty well written in the philosophy page of Sagdas what it's what's the point with the beginner and more advanced user distinction, and maybe it makes programmers and managers feel good to present their work as being very friendly to beginners, but it's really an obstacle for non-beginners. And let me see what we can maybe skip over because it's redundant. Then we have APIs. That's maybe one of the latest layers that has built on top. API is a layer, and it has been laid upon all these other layers, formats, and stuff like that. And yeah, and then it's not even well implemented. Often things are missing what one would at least like to have, and so it's really a case of instead of trying to fix it, we write from scratch. One has really use the razor and go to the source of information, the text strings in a text file, preferably with no markup. The people that use this data are usually only library users that want to check out a book, or researchers that want to write about the book and maybe cite it later. And then the only thing that needs for layout is maybe some italics, or maybe some I think italics is the only thing that would be needed and that can be added later on easily. We don't need to save emphases in the format. Yes, let's see. Yeah, who's responsible for that? I would like one can imagine a picture of the population of the Futurama sewers, and that's what I would depict these people that are responsible for that. Some people that work that apparently don't use what they produce, because otherwise they would do it more advanced user friendly. So management that falls for hypes and buzzwords. Often this management is made of ex-secretaries, professors, scientists, but they somehow lost contact to the purpose of their work, so it easily gets blown up with whatever is the fashion. Databases and search indices and stuff like that. Programmers, mainstream programmers, are often hired to do jobs which they are not personally interested in, and this reflects also in bad choices of language and bad choices of formats, and sticking to standards with for no reason. And then we have administration, a lot of administration in library and book industry, and they have also offensive to freedom values, Windows over Linux, proprietary over free, and sometimes not even care about their objects of all the efforts, the books. And that might be a psychological issue. Why is that they can continue with their bad quality work? And because it's no, it doesn't have consequences. There's no competitor on there competing with them, and that has been the case also in politics, and unless recently one party came up and produced some competition. So alternatives are sometimes they, in this case, certainly would have a good effect. Philosophical motivation. There are some quotes of Davila. It's a bit work in progress. I don't know of any English translations of him, so I can skip over it. More or less, it's he's a real radical thinker, like Nietzsche, one could say. So he does not he likes to he's always friendly towards the reader, and but he's not he treats the reader as an advanced reader, not the beginner. His style is very short, but on the other hand, not difficult. It's easy to read. Think Nietzsche when one reads of these quotes. He has written thousands of similar quotes, and these are just quotes too. I found recently when reading in his writings, and thought, yeah, that fits to the failed programmer, and that fits to the failed manager, and yeah, also yeah, also yeah, that's
I will try to translate it after.
Yeah, we can it's another project of me, this
maybe skip it and then I will translate
yes.
it and then talk about what every quotation means.
Yeah, and some more deplorable facts. It is a rationale for how in the world can this continue and flourish, this complex system society we have, and there's no shortage of in budget, and no competition, as I've mentioned. And then we had recently a nice scandal of predatory journals. I would rather it's most would rather point the attention to the typographical quality of the journals, because bad journals have no or very very shallow efforts in producing the typography, or the good-looking journals we used to have that are good and worth their price. So especially in the open in the open access scene, where it has become a fashion to publish journals without without costs, and it has quite a good reputation among librarians, but they also don't care much about typography, so it's really often not a pleasure to read these journals if one has some sense for good books, good looking books, or PDFs. So that's a new aspect in the discussions, this typography issue. So do librarians at all do something useful? Yes, they do. They do classification, and that's also something we had in the discussion earlier today and during a pause. It was about copyright, but in this case it's also forbidden to, at a large scale, make printed books machine readable, or have it as a searchable full text or offer it as such. And but it is not forbidden to ask someone who has read the book about what it's in there, and that would be maybe also a case for a bot or like Anna or someone else. If I want to know what the philosopher Davila has said about maybe incompetence, then it would be forbidden for copyrightly forbidden to scan the book and have it as a full text. But you could maybe implement a bot and have him answer this question. He also would have access to the text files, but maybe he's allowed to. I would like to. That's could be an idea. And change, it has been mentioned implicitly, what can be done to remedy this. There's the three items in the on the bottom are names that would help us, and usually the advanced user uses some kind of literature or bibliography formatting program, and they are not they are quite complex too, but in a completely different league as the other complex systems. But for example, producing a very simple BibTeX style is not trivial either, and TROF is not so well known nowadays, and even less known as the refer package, which is responsible for metadata, book metadata in the TROF world, and maybe it can be simplified a bit more. But for the time being, and for 99% of all queries, simple plain text is the thing to use. And then this second part of the then also try to stick to two long lines. That makes it easier for grep. It's very, very useful to have it like that. Shimbuns is something I would like to have a bit more. I've read the term in context of the W3M text browser, and it means a set of rules, mostly regular expressions, to filter a website. Remember this noise ratio I mentioned, 10:1, just to filter out all the noise and present the user only the strings he's interested in. And it was called in this context shimbun, that is the one Japanese word for newspaper, and that can be also used for libraries. Library catalogs strip out all the HTML and unneeded noise from the interesting strings, and it's usually very simple cascades of regular expressions that do the job, but the job has to be done for each and every website, newspaper, library a bit differently. And that's why, well, I think some 10 or 15 years, rather 15 years ago, some people began writing some shimbuns, and there are some traces left on the web, but that would be nice to do a bit more, or to revive a bit. Very short shimbuns. Yeah, that's my metadata for this talk. Just a pointer to the very simple philosophy page. If you are, I once tried to translate it to German. It was impossible because it's written in a certain style. It's not easy to translate it. One, perhaps the best way is to read it and write it from scratch in your native language. And then the philosopher, all his works in four books. And that's it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I will just use the slide so we can translate interactive, and then we do the.
Okay, I'm back. You hear me? First, I will go back in the slides and try to translate what he wrote in German for you. And after that, we will do the questioning and maybe some comments about what he was talking. He was actually mainly talking about, because he's working as a librarian, what's going wrong in his profession and with software and where we can help. So this means program with a small Negro. Yes, Negro.